You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
The name of the program is Full Contact Fighter Radio. My name's Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia. Thanks for tuning into the show once again. This post-UFC 68 program on the heels of a historic victory for Randy Couture over Tim Sylvia last night. We've got one of his corner men coming on the program. Mike Pyle will be joining us, discuss with us his thoughts on that fight and Randy's strategy, etc. And we'll, of course, talk to Mike Pyle about his own career. He just had a big win at the Elite XC. Debut card. We'll talk to Mike about his plans, what the future holds for him. Then we've got Benji Raddick coming on the program. Benji recently returned to action with the IFL, competing for the Anacondas, training with American Top Team down in Florida now. Benji, longtime observers of the UFC, would remember Benji from a few years back and had a couple of years away from the sport, so we'll be asking Benji all about that. Brendan will be joining me for the interview with Mike Pyle. We've also got Jeff Wombat Mazzaros coming on the show to share with us his rant of the week, his thoughts on UFC 68. So stay tuned for Wombat's thoughts as well. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With a Full Contact Fighter shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the quicksand, Mr. Mike Pyle in Columbus. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Can't complain. I guess the big news, obviously, Mike, everybody saw you. You're helping out corner out a fight, corner Randy Couture in that fight, man. Wow. Everybody's going to be talking about this for quite some time. As a friend of Randy's and you train with Randy, your thoughts on his performance last night, Mike?
Yeah, well, the performance was all Randy. I was just there to give the man water and to keep his neck cooled down in between rounds. You know, what can I say? He took it step by step. He did everything that was planned, that was put together in the preparation to fight Tim, and he went out and he executed it perfectly.
Yeah.
Mike, just to continue on that thread a little bit, what was the atmosphere like there last night? On the pay-per-view, it sounded like things were getting fairly raucous, but that's a fairly enormous crowd. What was the atmosphere like towards the end of that fight and at the end of the fight?
The atmosphere was great. Everybody, I think probably 90% of the crowd was behind Randy the whole time. They were chanting Randy's name the whole time. They were into the fight. They were educated crowd. Every time Randy had made a takedown or was advancing forward in the fight, they were respecting that and they were applauding to it. It was great.
Well, Mike, you're an instructor at Randy's Gym Legends. You train with the guy. What was his mindset going in? I mean, so many people doubted him, and I know I can't speak for the man, but what was your sense as far as people pitching him as an underdog? No one really gave him a chance to beat Tim Sylvia. I included thought that Tim was going to win. Your thoughts of training with the guy, did you have complete faith in his abilities the whole time?
We believed in his ability the entire time. We're the ones that get pushed around and beat up in the gym by this guy. we know what power he possesses and the mentality that he has for the game. He's a competitor. He has been since he's been a young man. So it's just in him, and he knows how to win, and he knows how to structure a plan to defeat a fighter. And he went in, and like I said, again, he executed that, and I was merely just a guy there to keep up with time and to keep him iced down in the middle of the round. There's absolutely nothing I could say in that fight to help him win. He just did his thing, and he did it himself, you know. In preparation, it was just we brought some big guys in for him to fight, to train with, and tall guys, long and lanky, like Tim was, and that's where some of the credit goes to, is those big guys that came in and took some ass whippings by Randy, you know. So
were you surprised at any time during the fight about how dominant a performance it was? Like many people said, well, if Couture's got a chance, it's got to be either this or that. He's got to fight the perfect fight, but it looked like from beginning to end, it was just a completely dominant performance on the feet and on the ground.
From beginning to end, it was dominant. Tim Sylvia is a very non-athletic fighter. Everybody knows that. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows that Tim cannot move fast, and he's slow. That's end of story. And anybody that stands in front of him is going to get hit. And if you don't stand in front of him, he's going to beat him. End of story. And we showed it last night, and Randy put a game plan together, and as well as some of the training partners, and executed perfectly.
Well, Mike, let's get into your career. Of course, you're coming off a big win, fighting for the Elite XC debut, a rear naked choke win over Ros Benyaz. For people who didn't get to see that fight, Mike, because it was one of the dark cards, maybe give us a little quick rundown first of the fight and your thoughts on your performance.
Well, you know, first of all, I had an excellent coach coming in with me. It was Randy. And the roles were reversed last night, and this time Randy was in my corner when I fought Ross, and we were prepared to fight Ross at anywhere that the fight went. I felt confident in my training and the people that were behind me, and we just went out and executed game plan same as that you saw last night.
One of the questions I had for you, Mike, you have left your IFL team. And one of the big things about the IFL, the IFL was that it's sort of the team atmosphere. And if any of the teams, you know, what, the Anaconda sort of appeared as one of the more cohesive and actually real legitimate teams. Was that tough for you to leave a bunch of guys? So you leave a promotion if you're just fighting for yourself, then you leave a promotion and it's no big deal. But is it tough to leave your team?
Well, you have to remember that. Before I fought on IFL, half of those guys on that team are and still are my teammates at the time. Mm-hmm. I've never left the IFL team. I did not sign to continue to fight with them, but I'm still with the same teammates.
Right.
With the majority of them, I still have a relationship with the ones that I'm not connected with. It was different. You know, it was something I'm not adapted to, and I just didn't feel that I fit in with that. So I moved on, and I went on to other things.
And what were your thoughts on Elite XC, the debut card, the crowd, etc.? I know there's some criticisms of certain portions of the crowd, maybe getting on fighters a little bit, but outside of that, yeah. It seemed like the event went off pretty well. What were your thoughts fighting for Elite XC? There was a lot of hype behind that event, Showtime, etc. What are your thoughts on it?
I thought it was great. You know, I thought it was a great event. I thought that we were treated well. We We had everything that we needed. Any time we need anything, they were there for us. It was ran well. You know, there were some good fights, and there were some bad fights. You know, that goes with every card pretty much that's ever been created. But, you know, I couldn't ask for a better weekend. I had the home crowd behind me, which was a big plus. You know, I had Randy, and I had my good training partner, Forrest, as well, Forrest Griffin. I had those two with me. Things couldn't have been better, you know. We went in within the game plan, and we executed, and most of all, we were treated well by Elite.
And what's your status with them now?
Hey guys, hold on one second. I'm sorry, go ahead, guys.
Well, what's your status with Elite XE right now? Do you have more fights signed with them, and when are we going
to
see a fight again?
I deal with Elite.
Okay. Any thoughts on which direction they're going as far as an opponent for you, Mike?
They might be gunning for the. I can't remember.
Are you talking about an event or WEC?
Either Gladiator Challenge or
Gladiator Challenge, yeah.
And or what's the other?
Well, there's World Extreme Cage Fighting, WEC, which is Zuffo ownership now.
Anyway, they got Weatherspoon. We're speaking about Weatherspoon right now.
Okay.
And so what is your thought now on reflecting you fought in Mississippi and then last night you were cornering the fights in Columbus? Do you think Middle America is ready for MMA, or do you prefer fighting in front of the crowds that are more traditionally combative crowds, like in Vegas or on the West Coast?
Yeah, Middle America's ready, man. They're ready for something to happen here. The crowd here was sold out. It was packed from wall to wall. I think UFC made a record last night.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
100% sure. Don't quote me on that.
No, I think they did.
I'm almost 100% sure they made a record.
Yeah.
And the people were well educated. Like I said, and during some of the fights when people would advance to better situations and escape from submissions and whatnot, people expected that and they applauded and they knew what was going on. They were well educated, and yes, they are very ready for this mainstream sport. Be a part of their lives in this part of the States, for sure.
Mike, I wanted to, it's more of a comment really than a question, but I'd still like to hear your thoughts about it. I finally got to see your last IFL fight with Matt Horwich, and the display of jiu-jitsu in that fight was fantastic. I highly recommend anyone who didn't see that fight to catch that, because it was great. It was an exciting fight, and you talk about fans slowly getting, or more and more getting used to grappling techniques and appreciating it. If there's one fight that people want to learn about grappling, it's that fight. Going up against Matt in that bout, is that what you thought he'd want to do, is try to get you to the ground?
I knew that.
Yeah,
I did know. I knew that 100%. If you look at 100% of his fight, it goes the same way every time. You know, he'll come in, he'll take a shot, you know, whatever you give him, he'll take it right in the face. He don't care. He'll try to eat those punches, those kicks, whatever, and just try to clinch with you and take it to the ground and just keep pressure on you until you break. I knew that going in, and the game plan was to try to stick and move, but, you know, I tried, and then we went to the ground. I did not want to get into a wrestling match with the guy. I knew I could do that and grapple with him. I knew I possessed those skills. I kind of wanted to display a more well-rounded, fight. He chose differently, so I took the fight wherever it went, and it ended up being pretty much an Abu Dhabi match. But he came out on the better end. He was a better man that night. 85 division is too heavy for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm only walking back in. I don't even cut weight for 85 division, so I'm just walking right back in at 85. So, you know, these guys got a little bit of weight. I mean, no excuses. Matt won fair and square. He outworked me, you know, whatever. He caught me fair and square. But the 70s is my division. That's where I'm going to stay.
Yeah.
We've never actually had Matt on the show. Is he as crazy as he seems on television?
Matt actually is not crazy. Matt is a very highly intelligent person.
Yeah.
On a level that some people look at differently because they're not used to that kind of intelligence that he possesses.
Did you say eccentric then?
He maybe his common sense is not as witty as others. But as far as figuring out situations, he probably can figure his way out of a situation more than 90% of the people in this world right now. He's a very intelligent person on a different level. And on a different level, he doesn't have so much common sense as most. You know, I don't really know how to put that, but he's a great guy, and you know, my hat's off to him for you know getting where he is with the way people perceive him. But if you sit down and talk with him, he's highly intelligent. You really have to just sit down and speak with him. Touch.
Well, does that eccentricity come through in the way that he fights?
You know what? I don't know if I can comment on that. It's he just puts together his game plan. And really, I don't know if it's a game plan or not. He just sticks with the same thing, you know. No matter what weight he's in, he'll take shots from the heavyweight and the light heavyweights, and then now down to fucking 85. You know, this guy is off. It's crazy. You know what I mean? And I think he'll be a mark. You know, someone to recognize in the MMA world. I never want to have to fight a guy with his style again, because I like a more, you know, I like a more adverse fighter. But you know, what can I say?
Well, Mike, my last question for you is kind of along those lines. You talked about some future opponents possibly for you in the Elite XC, and the Elite XC has been kind of different in the sense that Gary Shaw, one of the people behind it, has openly said that he's welcome to have anyone sign at the Elite XCs to have other fighters come in and compete against their fighters, including, you know, UFC Pride, wherever they may come from. Is that the way, the direction that you would like to see too, being a member of Elite XC? Would you open that opportunity to fight any of the best welterweights in the UFC or Pride? And do you think MMA, you know, needs to get to that point where we're just having fights, it's more about the fighters rather than rivalries between promotions?
Yeah, I would like to see... I would like to see those matchups, but I would also like to see these guys getting a respectable purse for the matchup. You know what I mean? You maybe have one guy coming in for $10,000, and then they bring in one guy that's making $50,000.
Yeah.
Because of his status. That's kind of garbage, if you ask me. I think everybody needs to be treated evenly. And if you want to pay one guy $10,000 and pay the next guy $50,000 just to show, then there's obviously a skill level difference there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So let's everybody be fair. Let's put two $10,000 purse fighters together and put two $50,000 purse fighters together. And let's everybody prosper, and let the guys that are fighting for $10 work their way up to the $50, fighting guys that are getting that same. That are getting the same, you know what I mean? We all train just as hard as any other athletes out there, and we just need to get that respect, you know. And when we get that respect, you know, it's something to fight for, you know.
Yeah. Well, Brendan, do you have anything else for Mike?
That's it. Congratulations, last night. Congratulations on your XC fight, and look forward to seeing you fight again very soon. Thank you very much, guys. You're going to see a lot more of Mike Powell. I'm back in the welterweight. And I'm ready to dominate. And like I have been in the past, I had a little loss in the IFL. I've got out of there. And so it's going to be climbing up the ladder from here. I'm with a great team. And that's pretty obvious to everybody. And it's just going to get better.
And when you're done cleaning out the 170s there, you can go back and avenge your loss to Rampage.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. He's a beast, man. There has to be a lot of things behind that to make that happen. But he and I are pretty good acquaintances, and we get along great, and we have a good time when we're around each other. So I don't see that in the near future.
All right, Mike. Well, we'll let you out of here. We know we probably got a lot of things to do. And congrats.
All right, guys.
On your XCV fight. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot, guys. You're gonna see more of me. Quicksand's back in 170s.
All right, Mike. Thanks.
Okay, guys. All right, bye-bye.
Live at the LA Forum, March 17th, 7:30 p.m., the International Fight League brings you four of the world's best mixed martial arts teams battling head-to-head. Brazilian legend Marco Ruas leads his Southern California Condors against Kenya Sudo's Tokyo Sabres. Plus, Frank Shamrock pits his San Jose Razor Claws against Buzz Rutten's LA Anacondas in a North-South rivalry. Get your tickets now at the Forum box office or Ticketmaster.com.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is a guy who was around sort of, not necessarily the beginning days, but it was around during some of the developing days, let's put it that way, Mr. Benji Raddick, UFC veteran. How are you doing today, Benji?
Doing excellent.
There's a few questions I want to ask you, Benji. For longtime observers of MMA, you're probably well-remembered. So what's been going on? You just made your return to the IFL, a successful one, taking out a guy, Ryan McGivern, which is no easy task. Before we get into specifics of that fight, Benji, why the return to MMA? And you were gone for something like, you know, well over 2 years, 3 years. So what were you doing during that time, and why are you back now?
What ended up happening is, you know, I would never would have left MMA, but had a ton of injuries all come at me at the same time. You know, I don't know if it was just, I don't know what it was, man. It just seemed like it was a chain of events that just put me down for a long time. It was, it first started with a fight I really shouldn't have taken with Chris Lieb, and I ended up having a staph infection in my calf from a spider bite, and I took the fight anyways, and I was just really exhausted. And about the third round, I was just totally spent, man. And he, Chris Lieb took advantage of that and caught me with a big left hook and ended up breaking my jaw. Well, that put me out for about six months. And then, I had to get a metal plate put in and stuff. It was a pretty bad break. And then, right after that, I started training to fight at the Tacoma Dome show in Tacoma. I think it was Extreme something. The event show they put up there, anyways, I was training to fight J.D. Taylor, and I had a herniated disc, and a piece of it tore off, and was floating around, and mashed up a bunch of nerves, and I woke up in the morning, and couldn't even do a push-up.
Wow.
It was really bad, so yeah, I was pinching all these nerves to my chest. I couldn't even flex a muscle in my tricep or my pec. And I was working full-time as an electrician at the time, and I had to wait. I finished this job before I could get surgery, which I wish I wouldn't have, because, in that amount of time, I had lost all my right pec and my tricep clear to the bone. So, it was really amazing. So, I got the surgery and had to, get all that muscle back and, get the nerves coming back again, and it took a long time, man. And then moved over here to ATT to get it going again and start training full-time, and everything was going great, and tore my ACL and had ACL surgery and ended up getting a bad staph infection where they put a catheter in my bicep that went all the way to my heart, and they would I had a nurse come to the house twice a day for 3 months and taking blood and giving the toughest antibiotics known to man. It was pretty crazy. So finally, after all that, man, it was about 3 years of just crap, man.
Sounds lucky. Like hell is what it sounds like. Sounds like living hell.
Yeah, it was terrible. But, yeah, it all worked out, man. And, in that amount of time, the sport had changed so much, with not only money but just the competition and everything. And I think it was really in some ways a good thing because, I still have the fire and drive to be fighting, and I might not have had all that drive and determination if I was fighting all the way through that time. So some guys get burnt out after a while and stuff like that, and I don't know if I would have been one of them, but it's a possibility.
Well, and then to come back against, like I said, Ryan McGivern, a tough Pat Miletich silverback fighter, not an easy way to return to fighting. Tell us a little bit about that fight. What were your thoughts, and how did you come to get involved with the IFL as an Anaconda?
How I became part of the Anacondas is, I've been friends with Boss Rudin for quite a while, and, we talked before. Actually, I was cornering Aaron Riley in prep in Japan when he first talked to me about it. It was before anybody knew anything about it. He was telling me the groundwork that was being done, and that he wanted me to be on the team, and I was like, man, I'd love to. I'm kind of messed up. I might be ready by the time you guys start, but I definitely wasn't. So he ended up having Mike Pyle on the team, and actually it was Amir Retevardi at first, and then Mike Pyle. But Mike Pyle took the Showtime deal, and I was happened to be ready at the right time, and jumped on the spot. And Ryan McGivern, man, that was just, like the person I had to fight first. And, in a lot of ways I was really happy because, I didn't want to go have a couple tune-up fights. I figure when you're ready, you're ready. If you're training with really good guys and you're in great shape, you might as well fight somebody that's really tough than step in and fight some guy that doesn't have a name and could be tough anyways,
Yeah.
So, it was great to fight him. He was a big test to me, especially my first fight back. He was able to hurt me right off the bat, and he had a lot of intensity and just a tough guy, man. And it was just a great first comeback fight for me. And then to come out with a win was just incredible.
Well, you mentioned how much the sports changed in your last fight, like the before the return recently. It was 2004, June of 2004. And I guess at that point, MMA was probably starting to blossom, so to speak, somewhat as far as in a mainstream culture, but it's nowhere near. I guess 2005 probably was the breakthrough point, and now here we are, they're setting records. Some of the numbers released for pay-per-view dollars for the UFC, etc., are staggering. When you left, when you had all those injuries, Benji, did you ever think in your wildest dreams that you might, you know, be back involved in the sport? Where if you said, for, you know, you're working at it full time now. Did you ever envision that back in 2004?
I knew, you know, I was always, that was always kind of my goal, anyways, that I was going to eventually do that, even if I had to take, you know, a loss of money, because I really wanted to achieve what I could do in MMA, because, you know, training full time, because I'd never done it before. I've always trained, you know, worked full time and then trained, driving an hour to go train with Dennis Hallman, you know. It was just getting home at like midnight and working, you know, getting up in the morning at 8 and working all day. It was just, it was always just tough for me, you know. And I was able to do pretty well, you know, considering, but I never was able to train full time. So my goal was to, you know, that was always going to, you know, eventually take the time and take a pay cut and train full time just to see what I could do. Well, now, you know, people are getting paid, and I'm able to, especially with the Anacondas, you know, I'm on salary, so I'm able to train full time, and it's just, man, it's night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, there's things like my recovery time, and I'm learning so much about my body, about rest, and training hard, and man, it's just completely different. It's so much nicer.
And obviously, you can't train an extensive amount with the Anacondas because they're across the country from you, but what's it been like going to American Top Team? Clearly one of the most highly regarded teams in the world.
Oh, it's awesome. It's really, really cool, man. You know, I have one of the best workout partners. Dennis King is like, you know, we just push each other really hard, and, you know, we're always down to work out hard, and it's great having a, you know, workout partner that's driven and determined as myself, and so we see ourselves grow every day as we're training, and it's pretty awesome, not to mention all the other talent that's in the gym, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think a lot of gyms across the country have the same problem as, you know, not having those bodies to work out with and, you know, tough, you know, talented bodies, you know.
Well, what's...
And, American Top Team has tons, so it's really, really cool. Fortunate for that.
What, do you know then, when's your next Anaconda matchup, and who are you going to be fighting?
The next one is coming up. It's the 17th of this month, just a couple weeks away.
Yeah.
And fighting another tough kid, Brian Foster, who's a really tough brawler guy that, you know, I've been hearing more and more about him, that he's, you know, he's came a long ways in just, you know, a short period of time here lately. You know, he's been training with Dan Henderson, and a tough kid, very tough. So I'm just, you know, going to be ready for that, just like I was for Ryan, and going blazing like I did that fight.
And what can fans expect from the new Benji Raddick? You're well known for having heavy hands, assertive, aggressive. Looked like you prefer to sort of stand up and bang. Then you're an American Top Team, a very well-rounded club, and of course training with Dennis Allman back in the day, you had good jiu-jitsu skills as well. But are people going to see the same kind of Benji Raddick, a guy that likes to, you know, bring the pace and be assertive and aggressive in the ring?
That's exactly right, man. That's, you know, that's what I love to do, and that's what's exciting. You know what I mean? That's what people want to see, and that's just always been a part of my style. And yeah, I'm excited to keep learning and growing, and they're probably gonna, you know, fans are probably gonna see a lot more, you know, things from me, because I'm getting better as, you know, as time goes on too, because you know, I'm pretty new in the sport in some sense, because, you know, I haven't really been fighting all the way through. You know, I fought for about 4 or 5 years, and then I've been done for the last 3 years, and really couldn't train at all in that period of time. So. That's still a lot of growing to do, so I'm excited to see what the future brings.
I like to ask guys that have been involved in sport for quite some time and been around in some of the earlier days and hear their thoughts about the evolution of the sport, and you mentioned that it's changed a lot. Do you really start to notice that, Benji? I mean, when you first got into the sport, it was still kind of somewhat, guys sort of had a base, and they started to work around that base a little bit, but now you've got guys coming up that have, you know, been already been training in MMA in several styles since they were 13, 14 years old. Are you starting to see that as a fighter, becoming more cognizant of the evolution of fighter skills?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, fighters are, you know, completely evolving, you know, as time goes on. And, you know, back in the day, you could be a really good stand-up fighter and get pretty far. You could be a really good jiu-jitsu guy and get pretty far, but everybody knows now that, you know, you can't have that anymore. You know, you gotta know everything and, you know, be fairly decent at everything in order to go very far. So, it's definitely changing quite a bit. And, you gotta study, you gotta put your homework in and know everything, man, and put a lot of training in to be one of the best. So, it's pretty cool.
Your last UFC fight was a loss to Sean Sherk, and I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the fact that he's dropped down to lightweight. He's had some injuries, so he hasn't been able to defend his title yet, but a lot of people are expecting him to be a champion for quite some time at lightweight. What kind of fighter do you think is it going to have to be, Benji, to take out a guy like Sean Sherk?
Sean's tough, man. You know, he's got a really aggressive, strong ground and pound, you know, just, you know, hard work style, man. You know, he's a hard worker and I don't know. I don't know who's going to beat that guy. And, you know, it's going to be somebody that's very, very diverse. You know, like we were just talking. You know, it's got to be somebody that's got really good jiu-jitsu in order to stay away from his ground and pound, and somebody that's really good on the feet in order to use his reach and leverage advantage and not getting taken down and, you know, keeping on the feet and hurting him. So, you know, it's going to be hard. It's going to be interesting to see who does beat him. It's great to see him do so well, you know, and having fought him and did pretty well until I got cut, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool to see him keep winning.
Did you get a chance to see the fights last night?
Yeah. Awesome, man.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody's talking about it today. The Couture fight. I admitted earlier that I didn't predict Tim. I predicted Tim Sylvia was going to win, and obviously I was blatantly wrong. What were your thoughts on that fight going in, and what are your thoughts on Randy's performance?
It's kind of cool seeing Randy fight him because I helped Jeff Munson train for Tim as well, and Randy really did what Jeff was supposed to do. You know, we trained so much on the single leg dump. Jeff didn't hit that single leg dump at all. You know, he shot double legs, which we trained not to shoot that at all on Tim because he was going to just put all that weight on him and that's what he did. So it's kind of cool to see Randy do exactly what Jeff was training and planned to do. You know what I mean? He was hitting that single leg dump and putting him on his back and doing everything perfect. It was just it was awesome. And then along with that, it was great to, you know, be able to train with Randy and know him as a person and a fighter, to see him do so well and come out with that win, man, and being 43 years old and being a champ again. It's so cool.
And what on the topic of welterweights, the division you fight in, your thoughts on Matt Hughes? His performance against Chris Lytle looked like, some people were speculating, you know, would Matt come out, and he's always openly talked about wanting to win the fight, standing up, that his skills have progressed standing up, and certainly they have, but against George St. Pierre, maybe he made that mistake. BJ Penn looked like he tried to exchange with him for a bit, and then against Chris Lytle last night, it looked like he just was all about business, more similar to the old Matt Hughes. Your assessment on Matt's fight last night?
Yeah, that was just, seemed to me, you know, just the basic Matt Hughes, you know, being too strong and too much of a wrestler for everybody. You know, he's fought in the past, and he really utilized that, man, and it just showed that he is dominant, man. He's strong and tougher than hell. You know what I mean? He's too much man for Chris, basically.
Well, and actually, I said that you fight at welterweight, but I guess your last fight was at 185, right? McGivern fights at 185.
Yeah.
What's that been like for you? Why did you fought before at 170? Did you just bulk up more as you got older? You're more comfortable at 185, or are you planning on going back down to 170?
No, yeah, 185 or, you know, maybe heavier in the future. You know, I just kept growing. You know, after high school, I just keep growing. You know, and I'm floating at. See, that last fight, I cut down, I cut 15 pounds to make 185, and then I was back up to 205 when I fought Ryan.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, I'm cutting quite a bit of weight, just like I was for 170. I was losing about you know, 20, 25 pounds. And so, it's, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, I like 185. I feel fast and strong at 185, so I'll probably end up staying here, but it depends. See how training goes. You know, training full-time is definitely a little bit different now. You know, putting a little more muscle on and staying pretty lean as well. So, we'll see what happens.
Well, my last question then for you, we'll leave on the middleweight note. Your thoughts on Rich Franklin's performance against Jason McDonald and something else that I think people are going to be discussing. It sounds like the rematch with Anderson Silva is going to happen pretty quickly. Your thoughts on that rematch coming about so quickly, and do you think Rich is going to be ready for Anderson Silva?
You know, I think that if Rich is mentally ready, I think he'll do a lot better than he did last time. You know what I mean? It looked like when he fought in that fight, he wasn't prepared, didn't want to fight. You know what I mean? He wasn't doing anything. Anderson was grabbing the tie clinch, and he was just staying in it, you know, wasn't fighting out of the tie clinch, wasn't doing everything he was supposed to be doing, you know, as a fighter, and it was kind of difficult seeing that, you know. It was hard to understand what was going on in that fight, but I don't think it was really Rich's best ability, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd be willing to pay some money to see that, so I'm sure everybody else will too.
Well, Benji, thanks for coming on the show, and welcome back to the sport, man. It's good to have you back, and stay healthy, and we look forward to your future fights in the IFL, I guess, coming up on the 17th against Brian Foster.
Awesome. I appreciate it, man, and I'm excited. I'm excited to keep winning, man. We'll see what happens.
All right, Benji, take care.
Take care, bro. Bye-bye.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
Full Contact Fighter.
Undefeated, no holds barred, news source of the world.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is the infamous Wombat Mazeros. Jeffrey, how are you doing today?
Is infamous better than famous?
I think it depends on your moral fiber, whether or not you want to be known as good or bad.
My moral fiber? Oh, man. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know about your moral makeup either, buddy.
You don't want to know my moral fiber. Let's just move on.
Yes. Well, let's jump into the mailbag. There's already a couple emails in regards to some of the segments you've done with us, Jeff, so let's jump into that. The first one's actually a nice one, buddy.
Oh, good. Yeah. Nice for a change.
Yes, exactly. Ryan writes in, and it doesn't say where he's from, but Ryan writes in and says, Jeff Mazeros is by far the most engaging, charismatic, and funny person I've ever heard on any MMA radio show. I don't think I'm alone in hoping that you make that guy a regular co-host. Thanks. Have a good one, Ryan. Isn't that?
Oh, that's lovely. That's good to hear.
Yes. That's probably the only. That's the last good news email I'll read to you, buddy. Traditionally, we don't. You know, sometimes people write in nice things, and it's great to hear. Don't get me wrong. And people can feel free to write in nice things, radio@fcfighter.com. But generally, you know, we don't want to, like, pat our backs too much. So I just thought I'd read that email for you because I know you've got a lot of self-confidence problems.
Well, it's nice to know that that's the last good news I'll be hearing.
Exactly.
So now let's move on to the criticism.
No, I'll spare you those ones. No, there's one in from Tim Lee. He writes in and basically talks about we were discussing the Russell versus Kharitonov submission. And whether or not Russell's complaining that maybe Kharitonov held on to it long or, you know, the tapping issue. You remember that discussion, Jeff?
Yeah.
It says, Tim writes in and says, Russell is complaining about Kharitonov holding his gloves, not the armbar. Nevada State Athletic Commission rules state and even Pride World fighters are not allowed to hold their opponent's gloves during the fight, Tim. So, thanks for clarifying that, Tim. And I think he's got a good point there. That probably is what was making Russell so upset.
Well, he does and he doesn't, and I mean, you watched the UFC last night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when Couture was on Tim Sylvia's back and Sylvia was defending the choke, was he holding on to Couture's glove?
Yeah, it looked like it.
Kind of he was, okay, and how about when Rich Franklin was fighting Jason McDonald, and McDonald had him in, kind of he had an overhook and an underhook, and he was holding on to Rich Franklin's hand, Was he holding Leonard Franklin's glove?
Yeah, no, it looked like it.
Yeah, I mean, dudes are wearing gloves. It's like having a rope with a big knot on the end of it. You know what I mean? You're gonna latch onto that knot. When a dude's trying to punch you in the face, the simple fact of the matter is you're gonna take every opportunity you have to not get punched in the face.
Yeah.
And if dude's wearing a big tool on his hand, you can't help but kind of latch onto it a little bit because you're trying to control dude's hand. Anytime a dude is in your guard trying to punch you in the face, you're going to hold his glove. I mean, you're going to, well, not his glove per se, but his wrist and, you know, the glove's kind of there helping you hold it and whatnot. So, I mean, you know, I mean, if Lesnar's complaining that you know, hey, he was holding on to my glove or whatnot, I mean, yeah, he probably was. I'd hold the glove too if there's a huge wrestler in my guard trying to crush my head. Mm-hmm. It's just the simple fact of the matter, you know? And, I mean, they can look into it all they want, but, I mean, as long as guys are wearing gloves and there's grappling involved, the glove's going to be a factor in that grappling, regardless of what crazy rules they make about it.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like the rule about holding onto the shorts. That's a completely different matter. You know? But with the glove, you can't kind of help but kind of latch onto it. You know? It's just that's a fact of life.
Yeah. Well, maybe it depends on who's reffing and how much they're monitoring that. I don't know. It's
yeah. I mean, I'm talking about the actual, like, padding part of the glove.
Yeah.
If Hiratana was, like, hooking his fingers into, like, the wrist strap or, like, really hooking his fingers into, like, the wrist part of the glove, or if he's, like, unwrapping the freaking glove and, like, holding onto that part or whatever, I mean, that's clearly illegal.
Yeah.
But I didn't see him doing that. I just saw him putting an armbar on, and Russell couldn't get out because, you know, he had that big pillow on the end of his glove. I mean, it's harder to get out of armbars when you're wearing a glove. So, you know, if Russell has a problem with that, well, sorry. I don't know what the hell to tell.
Well, and the last email is directed towards me, Wombat, not you. And I wanted to read this and apologize if anyone else has noticed this. And I think I wrote Luke back. He wrote us, and basically this is what it says. It says, I just wanted to point out that it's probably rude to mispronounce Jason Lambert's name by pretending it's French. No one has ever said his name in this manner, and it's a good point, Luke. I apologize if I was mispronouncing Jason Lambert's name. I was probably calling Jason Lambert. My apologies. Anyone else notice that? It's Canada's a bilingual country, and you know, having taken French for many, many years, even though I don't speak it very well, you know, I just got to apologize. Sometimes, Jeff, you know, up here in Canada, I see a name that says ERT.
Jason Lambert should be excited that we're talking about him at all.
Hey, well,
I mean, come on.
He was impressive last night, dude.
Yeah, oh, he was really, really good. He took Hinato Babalu to task. He smashed him in many ways. But, I mean, for people to write in and get mad that you're mispronouncing people's names, that's crazy. Any publicity is good publicity. You're just saying Lambert. You're not calling him Jason likes to eat maggots for breakfast. Just slightly mispronouncing his name. You're not disparaging his credibility or saying the man eats babies every morning. I mean, come on, you called him Lambert. Big freaking deal. It's an honest mistake.
Yeah.
You think I'm probably mispronouncing Sergei Karatonov right now? You think he's gonna write in and get all mad at me and like come like Russian paratroopering down and kick me in the head? Probably not. He should be delighted we're even talking about him. People listen to this crap, you know.
Well, you know, I apologize. Like I said, you know, names end in ERT, and sometimes just like Patrick Roy, the famous goalie. You know, if I see a name spelled R O Y, I'll probably say Wah.
Yeah.
You know?
But, on the topic, if you ever talk about Roger Gracie, it's not Hodger Gracie, it's Roger Gracie. Apparently he gets really annoyed when people call him Hodger.
Yeah, see? I guess it can go both ways. Well, anyways, thanks
no,
for those.
No, it's Hodger. It can't go both ways. It's definitely pronounced Hodger.
No, I'm just saying, you know, some guy, anyways, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Good.
Radio.
Radio
at FCFighter.com. That's where you can send your emails if you want to bitch about Wombat, and I highly encourage people to do so. Jeff, when we come back from commercial, we'll talk about UFC. I'm anxious to hear your thoughts, buddy, so hang on the line.
All right. Okay.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world, and when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvers with Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Well, Wombat, all I can say, Randy Couture, man, that was unbelievable last night. Of course, everybody knows by now, Randy Couture winning his fifth UFC title, dominating Tim Sylvia. I have to admit, I was wrong. My predictions, although I was right on most of my predictions last night, I should brag. Tim Sylvia, I thought Tim Sylvia was probably going to stop Randy. That's what I said. I thought he'd get him with a big right hand, and I was wrong, yep, man. Unbelievable. Couture showing great head movement, great stand-up. He was far quicker than he seemed like, quicker in my opinion than he looked in his last fight against Chuck. You know, going to the cage, showing great strength. It was unbelievable.
First of all, quicker is a matter of quicker compared to what? He was quicker compared to Sylvia.
Sylvia, correct.
When you put him in there against Chuck Liddell, he may not look quite so quick. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Tim Sylvia's 265. He's got 40 extra pounds of luggage. I mean, if you and I had a foot race and you had to carry an extra 40 pounds, you know, I've never had a foot race against you, but I'm pretty sure that would give me an advantage in terms of quickness. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I was wrong too. Everybody was wrong. You know, every prediction I read had Tim Sylvia pounding Couture in the face and Couture crumbling to the mat and that's that. And then Sylvia dancing around and not being humble at all. You know what I mean? Like, that's what everybody thought was going to happen. And I mean, in everyone's defense on paper, you know, Couture had gotten knocked up Liddell, who's, you know, a striker. He hadn't done well against Rico Rodriguez, hadn't done well against Josh Barnett, you know. Now he's fighting a big guy that combined all those things together. But I mean, I guess what we didn't take into account was the fact that, I mean, Couture is like a very, very highly decorated wrestler, and Sylvia, when he fights, is kind of flat-footed. I mean, Couture couldn't really handle Liddell, but Liddell's a highly, highly decorated wrestler himself, and when he strikes, he doesn't really stop moving. He just dances around while he's nailing you. Every time Sylvia throws a shot, he kind of digs his heels into the ground, and Couture took advantage of that. And another thing is that, like, when Sylvia fought Jeff Munson, Munson comes from, I think, more of a freestyle wrestling background. He was shooting at his legs and his knees and his feet, this kind of thing. Of course, he's shorter, so he can't really box his way in quite as well. Couture combines Greco-Roman wrestling with boxing in a way that I think Sylvia had a much, much harder time defending. He wasn't shooting at Sylvia's knees. He was shooting in at his hips, and he was getting sort of a swing set hands under the balls thing, so he effectively couldn't sprawl. And Sylvia was right from the get-go pooched. And the other thing is, Couture wasn't afraid of Sylvia at all right off the get-go. He went running in, punched Sylvia right in the sideburns, took him down, took his back, and you know, I think if Couture had transitioned to the armbar when he had Sylvia's back, he might have been able to finish that match in the first round.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was wrong, but I've never been so happy to be wrong in my entire life.
Yeah, it definitely was one of those fights, and I said this to you off air, it's one of those fights that I think everybody's going to remember where they were when they watched that. I mean, you're watching history be made, and it was unbelievable. I think the key factor for me was the head movement of Randy. That it was something that he didn't show so much against Chuck, and that's, you know, excellent head movement, swerving, ducking underneath, bobbing and weaving under Sylvia's strikes. And I thought I thought Tim's strikes were a little bit too telegraphed, you know, really trying to load up on that right hand constantly, and I mean, yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable. And, you know, I want to ask you, Wanda, where do we go from here then? I mean, Couture, based on that performance, you look down the line, in theory, you could have to defend it against Andre Arlovsky, Mirko Krokop.
Right.
What are your thoughts? How does he match up against some of the other heavyweights in the UFC division then?
Well, I mean, I thought Sylvia was going to knock out Couture. So what the hell do I know about Couture versus Krokop or Couture versus Arlovsky or whatever? I mean, I was already counting dude out. I mean, Randy Couture is now in that category, along with a few other guys, where, you know, I'm not sure what the hell is going to happen. You can put him in against anybody, and a dude could win. I mean, seriously, I think he might be able to beat Mirko Krokop. I mean, if you look at when Mirko Krokop fought Fedor Emelianenko back in Pride, you know, I thought Krokop was going to win that one, and Fedor outboxed him. I think a real consideration in that is that when you're fighting Randy Couture, you're a really good striker, you can't just be comfortable striking. You have to worry about being taken down and getting punched in the face. So you can't just focus on unleashing combinations again and again and again. You have to worry about him getting into your hips and, you know, slamming you onto your head and, you know, starting to mess you up, you know. And I think that's part of the reason Krokop had a harder time with Fedor, is because he was worried about maybe getting taken down. And I think he might have a similar problem with Couture, because maybe I'm completely wrong here, but when I watch them fight, I don't see that big a difference between the way Fedor uses boxing and takedowns in combination and the way Couture uses boxing and takedowns in combination. It's a Greco-Roman judo kind of style. It doesn't involve shooting at the legs. It involves getting upper body control. And I think Krokop might have the same problems with Couture that he had with Fedor.
Yeah.
But then again, there's also that high kick issue. And, I mean, if you look at the way Couture was fighting Silva, in the later rounds, he was tired, and his hands were low, and if Silva had been quicker, he might have been able to kick Randy Couture in the head, and Mirko Krokop does not lack for quickness. So if Couture fights Krokop, he might be able to take him down, but then again, if he gets tired and in the later rounds and his hands go down, Krokop could give him that lightning kick in the head. And, you know, and like, let's not forget, Couture is 43 years old, and as you age, your brain's ability to get kind of waffled around doesn't really, you know, doesn't really hold up. So, I mean, the older he gets, you know, the more susceptible he's going to be to getting KO'd, you know, and
yeah.
Krokop's a KO machine, so that's a great fight. Certainly I would much rather see Couture versus anyone than Silva versus anyone. So, I mean, it opens the door now, and I was saying this to my girlfriend this morning, for much, much more exciting fights. Krokop versus Couture, Arlovski versus Couture, you know, I mean, we'll see Brad Imus is fighting Heath Herring, we'll see how they do, you know, and the door is just wide open, and again, the question is, where does Silva go from here? I mean, are they going to give him, and the UFC's, you know, got a huge predisposition towards rematches. Are we going to get Couture versus Silva 2 and 3? I hope to hell we don't.
I don't
want to see it again.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see that anytime soon. I mean, it was such a dominant performance. I think that's a really good point to make, and I think, actually, and I wish I could remember where I read it, but I know Couture, in one of his pre-fight interviews, he actually said a lot of the things that you just said was that when people criticized him for going back into heavyweight and competing in a division, which in all fairness, Randy did say previously that he should have been fighting at 205 his whole career. He's kind of maybe changed that a little bit. But, you know, his point was that the guys he lost to at heavyweight were more the grapplers, the big ground and pounders, the guys with a great jiu-jitsu game like Rodriguez, like Barnett, that could get Randy on his back or reverse him, sweep into his back, and pound him out from there. And he thought
right.
that made someone like Silva, and again, someone like Arlovski or Krokop, who are more known for strikers, you know, he might match up better against it, and that's what you're saying. I agree.
Right.
I think the bit about Silva, yeah, you're right. I mean, where do they go from here? He was a pretty unpopular champion, I think it's safe to say.
And the sun's pretty warm. Talk about the understatement. The guy was wildly unpopular. People were booing him at the weigh-in.
Yeah, I think some of that criticism was a little bit harsh. You know, I think he does deserve some credit for the way he defeated Monson. I mean, a lot of people said that if Monson got him to the ground, it'd be over. But I guess that's all kind of pointless to discuss at this point. I think the reason, you're right, people are going to really look forward to, and the heavyweight division could arguably be now the spotlight of the UFC, is because people just love Randy Couture that much. The guy's a legend, and now watching him defend that title, yeah, I mean, the UFC, apparently a story was released this week that they made $220 million in pay-per-view numbers. I'm not sure how accurate those numbers are. I have to look further into it. But if that's true, man, I mean, look at it now. You got Randy Couture is your heavyweight champ. Chuck Liddell is your light heavyweight champ.
Right.
Could be huge for 2007.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. You know, but I mean, we're getting back to the point about the criticism of Tim Silva. I mean, the dude gets paid a lot of money, and if he doesn't like being unpopular, he shouldn't, you know, flip off the fans and you know, flip them the bird. He shouldn't spend half his fight, you know, throwing pawing jabs while backing away from his opponent. I mean, the guy fights. Remember Pat Miletic back in the day? People called Pat Miletic the Croatian sedation because he was kind of boring. He took a lot of the same criticism that Silva takes, you know, today or took up until this point because for the same reason. He went in there not necessarily to go forward, as, you know, but to kind of jab and back up because his whole, you know, remember the fight between Marco Hulas and Oleg Tatarov way back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
And Oleg just kind of stalked him. Marco Hulas was backing up. When you fight someone who's trying to grapple with you, sometimes you're a striker, you have to back up to keep that distance. And Silva backed up a lot. He spent a lot of his fights backing up. And, of course, there's that whole Seinfeld-Kramer issue where he had, you know, a 40-pound advantage in all his opponents. I mean, I don't think Silva would have been as unpopular if he'd fought more guys like Dan McGee that were his own freaking size. That way he wouldn't have gone into the octagon every time looking like a bully. And if I were Tim Silva, you know, I would say to Dana White or whoever, hey, how about giving me some guys my size? You're making me look like a freaking idiot here. I keep going in and fighting guys like Terod Tellingman, like 230, he's like 40 years old. Andre Arlovski's 235. Randy Couture weighed in at 222. Asuerio Silva was like 225. I mean, you're going to look bad. You're going to look like an ass when you keep fighting guys who you outweigh by 40 pounds, you know? And in Sylvia's defense, I mean, obviously, he's not going to, you know, he doesn't have control over who he fights. He just fights who they put in the octagon with him. But, I mean, I'm sure he has some say in something. And if you keep, you know, if you only wrestled with the little people, you know, you're going to look like an a-hole. And I mean, in Sylvia's whole career, who has he fought that's been his own size? Dan McGee, and in Sylvia's defense, he knocked Dan Dan McGee out,
yeah.
And Wes Sims, who he destroyed out in Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I mean, other than that, it's been a litany of tinier people.
Rico Rodriguez, yes, but the Rodriguez he faced then, no. If you know, catch my drift.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Rico's, I think, now around 280, 290. Back when they fought each other, around 245, 250 part.
Yeah, he was a lot smaller when he fought Tim Sylvia. Yeah.
Well, let's get to your thoughts. You know, we got you going now. We got you raving. That's good.
Now all fired up.
Matt Hughes versus Chris Lytle. I think, you know, you and I both sort of thought it would go this way. Matt, obviously playing it smart, didn't even try to stand up and exchange with Chris pretty much, and took him down and won the fight. What were your thoughts on Matt's performance?
Well, I mean, Matt Hughes isn't an idiot. I mean, he did go into the George St. Pierre fight, and you heard with his comments about his faith and his religion and how he just thought that God really wanted him to win and all this stuff, right? You heard all that jazz?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he went into the George St. Pierre fight thinking that, you know, he was going to win just because he had God on his side. And then, you know, he got kicked in the head and maybe that, you know, shook his faith a little bit. I don't know. But I mean, now he's going in to fight, you know, Chris Lytle, and maybe he's like, you know what, maybe I won't leave this one in the hands of Jesus. Maybe I'll see what I can do here, and then, you know, because I mean, hey, God is great, but you're in a fight, there's a guy trying to punch you in the face, maybe I should, you know, train for that. Anyway, so I mean, he goes in against Chris Lytle, and he's not going to, you know, I mean, Hughes always says the same thing going into fights. He said it against BJ Penn, he said it against George St. Pierre. You know, he says, I'm going to stand and strike, and if that gets me in trouble, I'll just take the guy down, and I don't think he'll be able to stop my takedowns. And then he just goes in and takes the guy down right away. So I mean, what does that say about striking? I guess he figures that I'm in trouble right now in the first second and takes the guy down. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you look at it, to a certain extent, MMA has reached the point now where everybody's training in wrestling, everybody's training in jiu-jitsu, everybody's training in Muay Thai and boxing and all this crap. So it's getting down to who has better genetics and who has better strategy. You know what I mean? And if you look at a guy like Matt Hughes, genetically, he's a freak. Because if you look at George St. Pierre, the guy's a freak. I mean, he took down Sean Sherk, for God's sake. And Sean Sherk's like a foot smaller than him and a much more decorated wrestler, you know? I mean, genetically, these guys are just on a completely different level.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Lytle, he's got good boxing, he's got good jiu-jitsu. His wrestling, I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, he just genetically, I don't think he's on the same level as St. Pierre and Hughes. He just, when they were handed out fast twitch muscle fibers, you know, guys like Hughes and St. Pierre went back for extra helpings. And you know, and I don't know what Lytle did. He went and got something else, I guess, beats me. But,
well,
I mean,
I thought
he's just not on genetically, he's not on the same level as those guys. And I think it really showed in the Hughes fight. I mean, Hughes just kept taking him down.
Yeah.
They're just dominating him. And
well,
I mean, in Hughes' defense, he did go for submissions a few times, but only at the very, very end of the round. So, I mean, anyway, I mean, that one, everybody knew what was going to happen, and it just kind of played out like everybody thought.
Yeah, well, I think that was obviously his biggest weakness. The pre-fight interviews, Lytle said that if he gets taken down, he'll just submit Hughes, and you know, it was clear that he had not even a wrestling level even close to Matt Hughes, and easily got taken down. And to his credit, he showed good hips. He's always had pretty good jiu-jitsu, but Matt Hughes,
yeah,
his jiu-jitsu is underrated as well, right? So he's not going to be submitted very quickly unless you're going up against, you know, perhaps someone like BJ Penn who nearly submitted him. But I kind of felt bad for Chris in a way. He's probably going to have to work his way back into the UFC at this point. He's lost back-to-back fights, but you know, like I said in my predictions with Brendan earlier this week, I mean, Matt Serra took Chris Lytle down fairly easily in their fight, and Matt Serra's got okay takedowns, you know, not even close to the level of Matt Hughes,
yeah,
so it was really no surprise.
Yeah.
Rich Franklin versus Jason McDonald. My predictions with Brendan, I thought Rich would win this, and he did. I don't know, what were your thoughts on Jason's game plan and fight overall, and where does Jason go from here, Jeff?
Well, I mean, you know, as a proud Canadian, all about the Ann Murray and the maple syrup and the igloos and all that stuff, right? So I was kind of hoping Jason McDonald would, you know, do well. But I mean, realistically, the UFC, when they put matches together, they put them together, and sometimes intelligent people like you and I, and of course our much respected listeners, can kind of see through what the matchmaking, what they're hoping is going to happen. You know what I mean? And Rich Franklin versus Jason McDonald was just, in my opinion, I'm tempted to say it wasn't a good fight for Jason McDonald, but in losing that fight, it really hasn't done anything to damage his career, because, I mean, hey, it's Rich Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
But going into it, you know, you pretty much know what Jason McDonald's strategy is going to be. It's going to be to box his way into an upper body clinch where he can use his freaky long orangutan arms to get around, you know, the person's torso, drag them to the mat, and start looking for submissions, because that's, you know, that's what he does. But, you know, going into that fight, when Jason McDonald fought not have good boxing. I mean, he's kind of a brawler, but he doesn't have good technical boxing in the same way that Rich Franklin does. Mm-hmm. And Jason McDonald had real problems with a lot of Chris Lieben's, you know, punches. And so now he's going in to fight Rich Franklin, who's got much, much better boxing than Chris Lieben, plus dude's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. And, you know, it just didn't bode well for him. And you saw it. I mean, Franklin was throwing one punch and then McDonald would throw one punch and then Franklin would answer with a three or four punch combination. They just had McDonald just covering his head and turning away like someone's throwing freaking anthrax in his face. You know what I mean? And then he'd eat three or four more shots, you know? And he couldn't take Franklin down and it played out the way I suspected, I feared it would play out, you know? And now this fight puts everyone saying, oh, it was, you know, it's the old Rich Franklin. It's the Rich Franklin everyone knows and loves and, you know, wants to sponsor and whatnot. You know, it's the same Rich Franklin. It's you know, you put me in against Anderson Silva, I'm going to get kneed in the face. You put me in against someone who doesn't have my abilities, I'm going to look good. I mean, it's not that I'm changing, it's you're changing my opponent. You know what I mean? It's just the way life is, you know? So now that Rich Franklin has a win under his belt again, you know, I mean, the simple fact of the matter is the UFC does not like having a middleweight champion that doesn't speak English. Mm-hmm. You know? They don't like having his little bald translator and they're looking all weird, you know? They want a guy who's in there who's a former algebra teacher who's, you know, very charismatic, who looks like Jim Carrey, who's got a record for knocking people out, and can sell a lot of tickets. I mean, last night I was watching the UFC when they put Anderson Silva on TV, all these people around here are like, who the hell is this guy? Yeah. Who is this dude? They don't know. Anderson Silva does not sell the same tickets as Rich Franklin. The UFC wants Rich Franklin to be the champion again, and they're going to give him maybe a few more fights of people he can probably KO to get him back in a title contention. They might give him a title shot right away.
No, but I was going to, that's what my next question was going to be. It sounded like, and you probably were about 6-7 beer in at this point. Sounded like Rich said that Joe Silver or Dana White mentioned to him that there was going to be the rematch in Cincinnati, to which the crowd gave up, you know, a big roarous response.
So it sounds like
they're going to do that. And in my opinion, I said immediately to some of the people watching with me, I don't agree with that. I think Rich Franklin, of course, decorated champion. Sure, he deserves a rematch, but right away, I mean, why not have him fight at least once more? Why not have Anderson Silva defend his title once more? I mean, the guy, technically speaking, hasn't even defended his title yet. I mean, because Travis Luter didn't make weight. So why are we going to this rematch already?
Well,
you know,
I mean, if you rewind the tape a little bit, you'll hear me saying that the UFC doesn't want Anderson Silva to be their champion. Dude does not speak English. You know what I mean? And they don't like that. Well, they want a guy who's charismatic, who's well spoken, you know, who can sell some tickets. And Anderson Silva, he's to a certain extent an unknown. I mean, is he a great fighter? Absolutely, but he's not. The UFC, I don't think they see him as marketable as Rich Franklin is. Yeah. So, I mean, they're going to give him a title shot right away. And to question the UFC, why would they put this fight together? I mean, we're talking about people that had Tito Ortiz fight Ken Shamrock three times. We're talking about people that had Tim Sylvia fight Andre Arlovsky three times. Why the hell did the UFC do anything? I mean, does it make sense? Does it make a lot of sense? No, but I mean, well, how much sense does anything the UFC make? I mean,
When Anderson first won the title, I said to Brendan, and some other people sort of sent me emails, and they didn't necessarily understand what I meant. And I said, when Anderson first won the title, I said, let's hope that the UFC kind of makes Anderson a little bit of a bad guy, into which Brendan and other people said, well, what do you mean? Why does Anderson still have to be the bad guy? And I said, well, look, he's a great guy, he's a nice guy. I just mean in the sense that he doesn't speak English. American and North American fans are, you know, Rich Franklin is one of the more popular fighters with them. Why not give Anderson Silva 2-3 title defenses? He's a great world-class fighter. In all likelihood, he could still be the champion. Build the rematch up with Franklin to be one of the best, highest-selling fights of all time. And by having this rematch, and I completely understand what you're saying, and I agree with you. We all know the reasons why the UFC is not going to do this, and I think it's short-sighted, because if they waited another couple fights, I think the payout for them would even be that much greater. And I think Anderson Silva seems like he doesn't speak English, but he seems like a nice guy. And
he seems like a very nice guy. I mean, last night, after Rich Franklin won his fight, Anderson Silva's in there hugging him like he was in Rich Franklin's corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was crazy. He's obviously a super, super nice guy. I mean, how are you going to make a guy like that seem like a bad guy?
Well, no, but that's what I mean, not necessarily a bad guy in the sense that, you know, he's got to be some evil villain. I just mean that he's got to be build it into a fight where people, he seems, you know, insurmountable. He seems like one of the greatest champions of all time. And Rich Franklin, this darling for so many fans, is going to finally get his title shot after Anderson's defended his belt 3 or 4 times. That's what I'm saying.
I don't think they need to put Anderson Silva through 3 or more fights to do that. I mean, they're going to have Rich Franklin, it sounds pretty soon, fight Anderson Silva again. And I'm sure they'll have their big voice guy talking over highlight footage of Anderson Silva knocking the piss out of Chris Lieben and out of Rich Franklin together. Since Silva, the best striker in the world. He's knocked out everyone. You know, Rich Franklin on his way back to the top. And they'll, you know, and they'll make a big hullabaloo out of it, just the way they make a big hullabaloo out of everything that I mean, isn't really that huge a deal, you know? I mean, the UFC's marketing engine is about, it's like going to see a freaking hypnotist. I mean, they try and, like, get, because like I say, I mean, I think most MMA fans are going to believe what they're told, you know what I mean? It's like watching Fox News, you know? And to a certain extent, the UFC can do that right away. They'll have Rich Franklin match Anderson Silva right away. They'll hope to hell that Rich Franklin wins, and then they'll start, you know, selling tickets again. I mean, they'll have a champion that speaks English and is well spoken and can get back to being, you know, the freaking arithmetic teacher in the Zions commercials, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well,
so I mean, I understand your point, but I don't think they need Anderson Silva to fight three or four more times before making that fight and making a lot of money, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe it's just my own little selfish desires.
Of course, you are selfish. Yes. You are selfish.
I'm a shallow man.
Step program.
Very shallow. I think, I'm pretty sure that Jason McDonald still has 3 fights left on his contract. I'm not positive about that, but I believe that's what he told me when I talked to him last. So, I mean, we'll definitely see him back, and you're right. I don't think this tarnishes his career at all. It is Rich Franklin. It'll be interesting to see who they match Jason up against in the future, but, you know, I think that he still could very well be in the title contention picture if he continues to has some success, and maybe we'll see a Jason McDonald versus Nate Marquardt kind of fight, or maybe possibly Mike Swick if he gets by Yushin Okami, etc. There's certainly some great matchups for Jason. It's still left.
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, Jason McDonald's a very exciting fighter. I like the way he fights. He tries to finish fights, you know. He doesn't run away throwing jabs, and, you know what I mean? He gets in there to win or lose. He cuts to the chase. He knows what he's being paid to do, and that's entertain, you know. And so I think there's still many, many fights. You know, Yushin Okami, Mike Swick, Nate Marquardt, all these guys, like you say, you know. He might even fight Caleb Starnes again, you know, in the UFC. I think that would be very exciting to watch, you know. A Canadian versus Canadian thing going on, you know. Having said that, he's still got lots of potential. Like I say, his loss to Rich Franklin hasn't damaged his career. It was kind of like, you know, when Letterman, you know, he might have gotten the Johnny Carson show, but when he didn't, it was like, yeah, you know, I didn't get it, but am I upset? No, not really, because, you know, it's not like his career's over now. He still has a long career ahead of him, and he's still a young guy with a lot of potential. You know, he just didn't have the same abilities as Rich Franklin, but now he's training down in the Greg Jackson camp, and I'm sure that will benefit him a lot, and we'll see future success from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, fascinating television comparison there, buddy. That was well done. Well done.
True.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anything else? Maybe throw in like a Soap. Remember Soap, the sitcom? Something like that? Something more obscure?
No. I think I've wrapped that one up.
Well, Wombat, we appreciate your rant again. It's a rant, but it's got some good thoughts and insights in it too, you know. Not a lot of people can
good
do that.
Thoughts.
Yeah.
Some good thoughts, but also some very bad thoughts.
Yeah.
Well, that's my moral fiber issue.
We've come full circle. That's beautiful radio right there. Beautiful
that's
radio.
Good.
Well, Wombat, thank you again for coming on the program, and enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Anytime. Thanks, man.